If you want to make long-term behavior change, for most people, you've got to start small.
Hi, everyone. Drew Brody here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. Today's episode, we have my dear friend, Dr. Rangan Chatterjee here to talk to us about how we can transform our health, mental health, our body, our physical health, and our heart health, our spiritual health in 5 minutes. All it takes is 5 minutes. 5 minutes a day in these key categories can radically change our life for the better. If you want to hear how, stay tuned. Hi, everyone. Drew Brody here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, I want to talk to you about my favorite go-to meal. It's a huge, healthy, hearty salad. And the key is I never get bored of it because I'm constantly mixing it up and I'm including a lot of colors, a lot of layers, and a lot of textures. I'll give you an example. Just the other day, I made one. I took arugula, butter lettuce, I took fresh basil, mint, then I added things like nutritional yeast, red onion, avocado, watermelon radish, wild-caught sardines, cucumbers, a seed blend, and roasted chickpeas. And then I mix it all up. I pour it on extra virgin organic olive oil and a little bit of Primal Kitchen dressing, which I love. And I served it up. Everybody loved it. It was a hit. Now the key is I get all these condiments from Thrive Market delivered to my door so I don't have to think, and I can mix up my salad every single day. I can order all the pantry ingredients I use in my daily salads like wild-caught sardines, salmon, olive oil, hemp seeds, hemp oil, beans, and lentils, which I don't do a lot of, but I love to throw in every once in a while, clean dressings, nuts, and seeds. And again, I get them delivered to my door so I don't have to think of it, and I can vary my salad every single day. Thrive Market has thousands of products, including gluten-free, dairy-free, organic, paleo, fair trade, vegan, whatever you're following right now, they got that ingredient for your type of diet. And also, they have toothpaste and skincare products and non-toxic cleaning products for incredible prices, which are great if you want to keep your home clean during these times. They also, bonus, carry grass-fed beef and sustainable seafood options. It's so simple to plan ahead with Thrive Market and get all those items delivered to your door so you never feel bored of your favorite go-to meal, which I hope you'll try my salad out. So right now, when you sign up for Thrive Market, a new membership that is, they're offering a really cool deal for members of my podcast. If you sign up, you'll get a free gift, which is a personalized product based on your interest. When you sign up for a membership, they'll ask you a short quiz and then recommend a free product. You have an option to choose amongst a few different gifts. And anytime you spend more than $49, you'll get free carbon neutral shipping from one of their zero waste warehouses. So not only do you get the free gift, but you get free shipping if you spend more than $49. Thrive Market makes it so easy to change your diet and order nourishing ingredients at wholesale prices. To get this deal, just go to thrivemarket.com/brokenbrain. That's thrivemarket.com/brokenbrain. Sign up and start filling up your cart. You'll see the credit automatically deducted at checkout. Now back to this week's episode. Welcome to the Broken Brain Podcast, where we dive deep into the topics of neuroplasticity, epigenetics, mindfulness, functional medicine, mindset, and more. I'm your host, Drew Perode, and each week my team and I bring on a new guest who we think can help you improve your brain health, feel better, and most importantly, live more. This week's guest is Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, a dear friend of mine. Dr. Chatterjee is regarded as one of the most influential medical doctors in the UK and hosts the most listened to health podcast in the UK, Feel Better, Live More. His first three books have all been a number one Sunday Times bestseller, and his latest, Feel Better in 5, which just got released in the US, shows people how to transform their health in just 5 minutes. It's been a smash hit in the UK, selling almost over 100,000 copies. Most books don't even get anywhere near close to that in just 7 months. And as I mentioned, it's now out in the US. Professor BJ Fogg, who's been out on this podcast before, from Stanford University, one of the leading experts in human behavior, calls this book one of the best habit change programs he's ever seen. Dr. Chatterjee regularly appears on the BBC and television and has been featured in numerous international publications, including the New York Times, Forbes, The Guardian, Vogue, and his own TED Talk called How to Make Diseases Disappear. Dr. Chatterjee, welcome back to the Broken Brain Podcast.
Drew, thank you so much for having me.
It's always honored to have you back here because you literally were our first episode. We mentioned this last time you were on our podcast. You were our first episode that helped us launch this podcast. So it's an honor to have you back to talk about your book and all the really great ideas in it. Before we deep dive into the content, I want to acknowledge that you just came back from a little social media hiatus. You took 18 days off. Why did you do it? And what did you get out of it?
Yeah, Drew. I mean, first of all, thank you for your very kind introduction. And this podcast has got a very special place in my heart. This is the third time I think I'm featuring on your show. And yes, it was episode one as well. So it's always nice to come back. You know, you mentioned this social media hiatus. And, you know, I'll be honest, I hadn't really planned it. What happened was that, like many people, I was feeling a little bit overwhelmed. I had lots of competing priorities. You know, I had decided to stop my podcast for the summer. It's something I tend to do every summer. I normally release a weekly show every Wednesday. But, you know, my wife is the producer and we've got two young kids. And it's pretty, you know, it's pretty full on, you know, to record the conversations, get them edited, get them out. And I think also because of the pandemic, you know, it's been a very... it's been a very pressured few months. They've been wonderful on many levels individually, but there's also been certain pressures with that. And I thought, okay, you know what? People say you got to keep going, you got to keep releasing, you can't take a break. And I'm like, well, who makes these rules up, right? It's my show. I do it because I enjoy doing it. The things I talk about on it are about taking downtime, you know, making time in your life for the things that are important to you. And for me, I really felt that, you know what, I really want to recalibrate this summer. I want to spend time with my wife, with my children, without the pressure of having to put out that weekly podcast. And so I made quite a sudden decision. So, right, let's just stop it. We'll come back in September with a new season. And it's been great. So that was the initial component. And then during that time, I thought, well, you know what? I'm still posting on social media. Now I have a team to help me for sure. But at the same time, I thought, I just want to clear out the noise in my head. I don't want to be on there. I don't want to be checking. And it's not that I don't like social media, right? This is not about saying good or bad. It's about saying for me personally, and I would never suggest that this is the right thing for somebody else to do. But for me, I wanted some time off from it. And what I did, Drew, is I announced that I was going to do that on all my channels. I then immediately afterwards deleted all the apps from my phone. So I posted, announced I'm doing it, and then went straight into my home screen, got rid of the apps. And that was very, very important, Drew, because I tell you, for the next five days, there was almost like this reflex habit. I'd pick up my phone and I'd be like, oh, I'll just quickly check Instagram. And then I sort of flick and I couldn't see the app. I was like, oh, yeah, you deleted it. It took me 5 days for this kind of automatic program to reset before I actually stopped looking for it to check. And once I got used to it, it was bliss. Honestly, it felt amazing. And I hadn't planned to make it 18 days. The initial plan was, you know, I'll probably go for a week. Let's see what happens. But it felt really good. So 1 week became 10 days, became 2 weeks, became 18 days in the end. And what did I learn? I'll tell you what I learned more than anything, Drew, is I found without the noise from external sources coming in, I found I was able to go inwards and learn about myself. I really felt I was able to tap into my inner voice, not the influence of, you know, I follow incredible people on Instagram, you know, like you or whoever, you know, lots of, you know, who post inspirational content. So it wasn't that, you know, I curate my digital world very carefully anyway, so that I only see the content that makes me feel good and nourishes me and not content that makes me feel bad. So I already do that. So it wasn't about getting rid of that content. I already do that. It was about, I noticed that so much of our life, we are reacting to the world around us. We are having our thoughts influenced by the posts we read. Like, do I really think this, or is this what I've seen 5 posts saying today? And I didn't know I was going to experience this until I came out of it. But when I came out of it, I thought, wow, I really feel I've tapped in to who I am. I've managed to reset a few things in my life, and some new priorities going forward, the way my work week is going to look like. But I did a really interesting exercise I haven't quite finished yet, Drew, which was really to understand what my values are as an individual. And it's something I've not really done the exercise before, you know, and this sort of plays in a little bit to what we're going to talk about later with the book, I guess. But a lot of us have an idea of what we think our values are. But then when we look at our actual actions that we're taking on a daily basis, they're not really consistent with the ideal that we think we're living our life by. And so what I've tried to do is list down 4 or 5 values that I want to make sure when I do a weekly audit that I'm actually living my life by these values that I have specified. So that's one thing I did. This is answering your question, right?
Absolutely. It's super powerful. And I think that when our audience hears it, and even when I'm listening to you, really the themes that are showing up for me is that when you take a break from the noise that's out there, you can actually check in with yourself and what you really need. And the current state of the world, including before the pandemic, and it's kind of like things are getting a little bit back to slowly. It's never going to get back to normal, but it's a little bit getting back to normal. People are getting as busy as they were before. They're starting to run around, sometimes even more so busy because they're trying to do homeschooling. They're trying to do a lot of things, yeah. Juggle it all. It's easy to have those inputs distract you from what really matters and end up in a place where you feel like you just don't have time. You don't have time for the things that really matter the most. So yes, to answer your question, you are answering the question perfectly.
But you know, the time issue is really, really important, I think, to unpack a little bit, because there are many ways to carve out time for yourself, right? Did I need to go off social media to create that time? Could I have found another way? Yeah, possibly. I could have done, sure. But what I found, it was almost like pulling the ripcord. It was like, boom, with one clean sweep of deleting Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter off my phone, miraculously, time just appeared for me. And so it was a very simple, you know, for something that took me 30 seconds to a minute to actually do, that 30 seconds, let's say it took me a minute to delete the 3 apps, that 1 minute gave me a 100-fold return on my time investment. So sure, I could have tried to create another way, but for me it was and it's something I tend to try and do in the summers, like, because, you know, I'm a family man, I have kids who are off school, and, you know, spending time with my family is one of my highest values. It's something that it means the world to me. And, you know, with the best will in the world, social media is designed to be, you know, distracting you. It's designed to pull your attention. That's, you know, you mentioned BJ Fogg before. BJ has helped, you know, I think Instagram was founded in his class using a lot of his behavioral science principles, right? So they're designed to keep your attention. So you can try and fight that, or you can actually just pull the cord from now on, from time to time. Now, I don't think it's a substitute. I don't think I can do that for 3 weeks a year and then go back into constant usage, right? I don't think that's healthy either. Okay, so you have 3 good weeks and then the rest of your year is kind of, you know, you're letting social media rule your life. No, but I don't think it does rule my life anyway. I think I'm quite good at that sort of daily practice. I've been very intentional most of the time. You know, I'm human like anyone else. I can sometimes get pulled into it, but I'm pretty good about being intentional these days with when I'm using it, what I'm doing on it, and for how long. So it's been a great experience. If somebody's listening to this and they feel like they want to try it and they feel a little bit scared, they're not sure where, because it's amazing. When I came back on and I went back to the original post to see what people had said, some people were like, I'd love to do this, but I'm scared. I mean, I'm scared I'll miss out on what's going on.
Yeah, feeling like disconnected.
Yeah. And so I think people have got to figure out what's right for them. But if you are, you know, if you've never done it before, start off with a day. Maybe it's a Sunday. Maybe why don't you spend one day on a Sunday and go, you know what? Can I go without social? Can I even go without my phone for a day? Can I, if you're with a partner or your family, and if you can, some people say I'm a carer, I need my phone on me. Okay, fine. But if you are able to, why don't you challenge yourself to even half a day, leave your phone at home, go out with your partner, go out with your friends, go out with your family without your phone, and just observe what is that experience like compared to when you have it with you. And then you can decide for yourself if you want to bring that into your life a bit more or not.
Yeah, like even a phone-free weekend or a Saturday, you know, those things make a tremendous, you know, difference. And they build out a whole level of creativity, especially if anybody who's listening here is trying to create something, build something, step into a new version of themselves, a new, better, complete, more whole version of who they really are. That freedom that you have from inputs really allows for that to all come front and center. So, yeah. Rangan, I want to pivot and I want to start off with talking a little bit about some of these core ideas inside of your book. And I pulled something out here. This is a quote that you shared inside the book. And I've heard you share it on other podcasts that you talked about when it came to the launch of your book. And you said, "I don't believe you can be healthy by only focusing on one area of your health." You know, you have a hit podcast, number one podcast in health in the UK. I have a solid podcast here. A lot of our friends have it. And the tendency in the health and wellness world is to focus extremely on like just narrowly like one aspect, like just food or just this or just movement. Tell us, what do you mean by that quote? And what did you see with your own patients?
Yeah, it's great that you've identified that, Drew, because that's a real core belief of mine. And that really comes from almost two decades now of seeing patients. And I think we become very reductionist in the way we talk about health, even within the wellness world. I think there is too much focus on food. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Food is clearly important, but it's not everything to everyone. And I think it's very important that we all remember that. And I'll give you an example. So a lot of people out there are trying to lose weight. Okay, it's a very common goal that people have with their health. And they think it is solely about the food choices that they might be making. Now, here's what I see every January. Okay, and I appreciate we're not in January, but I think new year, new you, people can get into that mindset and go, okay, cool, I know what I feel like at the start of January. You know, when I decide that after all the excesses of the holiday season, that this is going to be my year, I'm going to get healthy. I'm going to go to spinning class four times a week. I'm going to follow this diet. I'm going to buy a diet book that somehow is miraculously going to fix me in a way that the diet book I bought last January didn't, or in the January before didn't, but this year somehow it's going to be different. And what I see, Drew, over and over again is that people will buy a diet book, let's say, they'll follow it and they'll do well. For a week, for 2 weeks, you know, 3 weeks, I'll start to lose weight. But often what happens is then real life starts to get in the way again. So the motivation has started to go down a little bit. Work might be stressful, right? And so their way of coping with a stressful day at work is to eat in the evening. So, you know, the point I'm trying to make is that food is not just food. What drives your choices? A lot of us know what we should be eating or what we would like to eat, but we don't think enough about why we're eating it in the first place. You know, Drew, weight loss. Most people who are trying to lose weight know that having biscuits or crackers or chips on the sofa in the evening in front of the television is probably not going to help them, right? They know that. Sure, they can buy another book that's going to tell them that, but I would say a lot of people already know that information. So the question is, why are they consuming it, even though they know that's not going to help them? And it really goes back to one of the themes we were talking about right at the start when you asked me about my social media fast, and it's about the fact that we're often using food to numb boredom, loneliness, stress. You know, we use food as a way of dealing with that. So, you know, another way for people to get it is, you know, we used to use food to fill a hole in our stomachs. Now we're using it to fill a hole in our hearts. And this is just one example, but I've found time and time again that when you take a rounded approach to health, instead of going perfect with your diet, you make your diet pretty good, but you also pay attention to your sleep. You also pay a bit of attention to your stress. You also do a bit of movement. I find you start to actually build a really solid foundation that not only works for 1 week, it still works in 1 month and 1 year. And so that's why I'm passionate about doing small things in multiple areas rather than maxing out in one area. Now, look, I will say different approaches work for different people. So some people will be listening and go, yeah, I get that, but I followed this diet plan for 30 days. I felt amazing. My joint pain went, I had energy, and that then motivated me to keep going and do other things. That is fine, right? I'm not saying there's one way, but I do think that for most people I've seen, when they take a slightly more relaxed approach, but to different areas, they get much better long-term results. And this is why, Drew, Feel Better in 5, it's been out now for, you know, coming up to 8 to 9 months in the UK. It's not really a diet book. There's only one of the things I talk about, and about there's 30 or 40 5-minute health snacks in the book. Only one of them is on food. Yet so many people, Drew, have contacted me on Instagram to say, Dr. Chachi, I've been following Feel Better in 5. It only takes me 15 minutes a day and I've lost so much weight, right? But people would say, well, why are you losing weight when it's not a food book? Well, what if a lot of our weight gain was actually because of the emotional drivers of eating? What if actually it isn't the food we need to address, or some of us need to address? What if it's the reasons behind our consumption? And I think the reason why Feel Better in 5 works for that is because, you know, it addresses stress. It addresses your mental health. It addresses your physical health. It addresses your heart health, all in simple 5-minute intervals. So, you know, I think you can go all out in one thing, but I just find it's more achievable and more sustainable when you tackle multiple areas at once.
You know, you mentioned New Year's and this excitement that people get when they have their New Year's resolutions and they're starting the year and they think that they need to go all in one category. And it's often that very extreme goals are set. I'm going to eat perfectly every single day. I'm going to go to hit the gym every single day. And a core premise behind your book, Feel Better in 5, is the 5. As you mentioned, it's 5 minutes. And what you noticed, as I was reading the book and preparing for this podcast and all our conversations, what you noticed is that that extreme approach doesn't really work for a lot of people and often leads to a place where usually like 3 weeks in, you know, 30 days in, 5 weeks in, somebody asks you, hey, how are those New Year's resolutions going? And many people here who are listening probably use this same response. It's like, oh, like I kind of dropped off. I got busy, right? I didn't have enough time. Talk to us about why that was a big part of the inspiration of how to figure out how to help your patients actually do things that are achievable and doable in their day with the time that they have.
Yeah, the best way of answering that, Drew, is to tell you a quick patient story from my clinic, because I think this patient really encompasses the whole approach in the book. Now, this is maybe 7 or 8 years ago. Okay, I was in a busy medical clinic, and a 42-year-old gentleman came in to see me, and he was suffering with the kind of problem that many people these days are complaining of. There'll be people listening to this podcast right now who are suffering with these complaints. He was a little bit overweight, he was struggling a bit with his mood, and he felt exhausted all the time. Okay, so 3 very common things. Now, we were chatting, and as I was, you know, unpacking his story, it was very clear to me that his lifestyle was contributing to a lot of his symptoms, right? So I discussed a number of options with him, and we, you know, we went through all kinds of things, but the one that he really liked was strength training. He says, Doc, yeah, what strength training is going to do that for me? Right, I'm in. You know, I've not done strength training since I was a teenager. It used to make me feel really good, but you're saying it's going to help me with my energy. It might help me with my mood and with my weight. Right, I'd love to do that. I said, okay, great. Let's just start there then. And he said to me, shall I do 40 minutes 3 times a week in the gym, as I've read? And I said, hey, look, if you can do that, that'll be amazing. So he said, yeah, I'm in, right? So I give him a follow-up appointment for 4 weeks' time. He walks out, big smile on his face, you know, standing tall, feeling motivated that he's got his plan of action. 4 weeks later, he comes in to see me. And I said, hey, how are you getting on? And he looked a bit different. His shoulders were rolled over a little bit. And he spoke a bit softly. He said, hey, Doc, you know what? I've not really managed to go yet. You know, work's been really busy. It's been quite stressful. The gym's actually quite far from my work, so it's quite hard to get to, and it's quite expensive. I've not done it yet, okay? And he looked and felt like a complete failure, that he couldn't do what I'd asked him to do or what he thought he was going to do. And I remember, Drew, in that moment, I did not think, why has he not done what I've asked him to do? I thought, Rangan, why have you given him advice? The advice you've given him clearly doesn't feel relevant to him in the context of his life. So I thought, okay, I've got to change it. I took my jacket off and I said, right, I'm going to teach you a 5-minute workout right now that you can just do without any equipment. He goes, okay. So I taught him these 5 exercises. I modified them for his ability level. I said, what do you think? Can you do that? He goes, yeah, no problem, easy. I said, okay, can you do it 5 minutes twice a week in your kitchen? And he said, what, 10 minutes a week? Is that all you're asking me to do? I said, yeah, can you do that? He goes, yeah, easy, of course I can do that. I said, okay, I'll see you in 4 weeks. So he goes out, I think a little bit confused with what I'd asked him to do. It wasn't what he was used to. 4 weeks later, he comes back in, Drew. And I remember when he came through the door, his chest is puffed out, he's standing up tall, big smile on his face. I said, how are you getting on? He goes, Doc, man, you told me to do 10 minutes a week, right? I love it so much. It makes me feel so good. I do it now for 10 minutes every evening before I have my evening meal. Now, Drew, he has done that for over 5 years. When he tried to do 40 minutes 3 times a week at the gym, he couldn't manage anything. But when I made it easy for him, he now does 70 minutes of strength training a week. 10 minutes, 7 days a week. Right, it becomes a part of his life. And what did that lead to? That led to what I talk about in the book. I call it the ripple effect. He started with that. That led to him changing his eating habits, sleeping better. Now, because I saw him recently, he does 10 minutes of breath work every morning when he wakes up. Right, this was a million miles away from where he was 7-8 years ago. But by starting small, by making him feel good about himself, he does more, not because I've told him to, not because I've asked him to, but because he wants to. And that's the secret to behavior change. And you can literally unpack the entire book in that story, because the various elements of behavior change are all there. And so, you know, I'd love to share to people what were the secrets in what I asked him to do that actually worked. Because at the time, Drew, I did not know the science of behavior change. I was going on intuition and gut feeling as a clinician. It was only when I actually met BJ Fogg last year, you know, as I always do in LA, I was staying with you and I flew off to, I think, Santa Rosa, and I did sort of boot camp with BJ, and we just hit it off like a house on fire. And what we loved was the idea. He said, Rangan, what's really interesting, you're telling me things that you've figured out from 20 years clinical experience that my 20 years clinical research has shown me. It was this beautiful intersection of me as a clinician, what have I seen work with real patients, with real busy lives and families. It matched up, it married up beautifully with his research, which has shown if you want to make long-term behavior change, for most people, you've got to start small.
That's so true. And I remember you telling me that you were going to go see BJ, and I was like, I went and did one of his early workshops almost like 5-7 years ago. And he had us like training goats and other things. And really, you know, there was experts from all around the world that were at this workshop that I remember from different companies. And as you've mentioned, you know, he's been influential in inspiring, you know, some of the behavior changes that are being used in apps like Instagram and kind of like, you know, a lot of other technologies that are out there. And I can remember one central idea that was there is that sometimes when you're an expert in a field, you forget that it took you years to develop the habits that you have right now. But think about a category or think about something in your life that you want to do that you're not good at yet. Let's say somebody has mastered their diet and they're working out, but they have not mastered their finances, right? So think about something that you care about, but you haven't gotten good at yet. Now, wouldn't you want somebody to tell you how to break it down in a simple way that could lead to those results? Of course you would. So why wouldn't you want to take the material you have now to set it up in a practical way? Because the truth is that podcasts and all these books, they're great information. And you and I know many of the health authors that put out this stuff and they're not doing it on purpose, but there's a lot of information that's out there that has not gone through the lens of behavior change. So the audience listens to it and they get overwhelmed and they never end up doing anything.
Yeah. You've just nailed it, Drew, for me. And that was the real motivation behind writing this book, is there's a lot of what you should be doing out there in health. There's many brilliant health books out there saying what you should be doing, but there's not many how-to books on health. And my book is a how-to. How do you put into practice all the great information that you may have heard on my show, on your show, on other amazing podcasts out there, but they stay as ideas and they stay as inspiration? How do you actually go and take action? Because there is a system. Human behavior change is not as hard as we think it is, but we don't follow the system. We don't follow the kind of rules. And I sort of outlined 6 rules in the book, but I wonder if you'd mind if I shared 2 rules, what I consider to be 2 of the most important rules.
Please, let's do it.
So rule 1 is you got to start easy. You got to make it easy. You got to start small, okay? That's rule number 1. That is exactly what I did with that patient, right? Now let's take it out of health for a minute, because I think people really get it. So many people, I'm sure, listen to this shop on Amazon, right? If they didn't before the pandemic, they certainly were during the pandemic. It was one of the only shops open, I think, throughout the world. So a lot of people shop on Amazon. Now, when Amazon moved to one-click ordering, maybe 5 years ago or so, estimates say that their profits went up by $300 million a year. Now, let's think about that. Why would that make profits go up that much, that quickly? Well, Amazon understand the rules of behavior change. They understand that if you make something easy, people will do it. 5-6 years ago, what did you have to do? You'd go on Amazon, you'd click what you wanted, then there's another screen, confirm it, another screen, put in your card details, again, one more just to check everything. Okay, that's 4 or 5 steps you have to take to make a purchase. Every step you have to take is a reason to back out and not do the behavior. Now they make it one-click ordering. Boom, before you've even blinked, you have an email saying a parcel is arriving the following morning. It's that easy to do it so that you do it. Right? Netflix, YouTube do the same thing. Why does Netflix roll one episode into the next episode? Right? So it's so you realize before you know, instead of looking at your watch thinking, oh, it's midnight, I've got work tomorrow, I need to go to bed and get up early, you're into the next episode and you're hooked, right? They make it easy for you to do the behavior they want you to do. Now, I'm not criticizing those guys, right? They're using behavior change to help you, to help them have you use their services more, right? And as a business, I get it. But I'm saying somehow when we talk about human behavior change, particularly health, We think it's got to be hard. It's got to be about deprivation. It's got to be about punishment. It can't be easy, right? How could it be easy? So we make it hard. So we say on January the 1st, right, I'm going spinning 4 times a week this year in the gym. And you know what? You do it for a week. You do it for 2 weeks. But when motivation falls, as it always does, suddenly you'll no longer do it. And I know you've had BJ on the show, and I think it's always worth a recap. Why making something easy is so important is because we overly rely on motivation. We think motivation will last forever. We make our health plans, what we do, Drew, is that we don't understand that motivation, and BJ calls it a motivation wave. So motivation comes up, motivation comes down. We make our health plans at the peak of the motivation wave, but I would say you should make them at the trough of the wave. Because then on those days when you're busy, when you're stressed out, when you don't have time, when your motivation is right down, you will still do a behavior if it is easy to do. You know, when your motivation's up, Drew, you'll do anything. If you're super motivated to make a change, yeah, you'll go running 45 minutes a day, fine. The problem is when motivation runs out, you'll stop doing it. So I think rule number one is you gotta start small, okay? And I've seen that over and over again. Rule number two is where do you put that habit in the day? And a lot of people don't think about the placement of that habit. They think, oh, I'll do it. Oh, I heard a podcast. I heard a Broken Brain show about meditation, right? So they get inspired. They go, well, I'm going to meditate. But they don't have a system. They think, A, they make it too hard sometimes and say, I'm going to meditate for half an hour a day, which again is unrealistic for most beginners. But then they don't spend any time thinking about where is this going to go in my day? And where you put that habit in your day is very important. So every single human behavior needs a trigger to actually take to do the behavior. You know, we're having a conversation right now. To do that, we needed a trigger. Now, the trigger might have been our memory. Oh, I must remember to call Drew at the time that we've agreed. I must remember to meditate. Okay, now that works. It just happens to be a very unreliable trigger. So if you are relying on that to do your health behavior, it's probably not going to work for a lot of the time. The next form of trigger is a notification or a reminder, like a post-it note on the fridge or a pop-up on your phone. You know, very much like, oh, on my Google Calendar, it came up saying, hey, in 20 minutes, you've got a conversation with Drew. Okay, that also works as a reminder. But the very best form of trigger is when you stick on your new behavior onto an existing behavior that you are already doing without thinking about it. So you stick on the new behavior onto a habit that you already have. So for me, for example, Drew, I work out for 5 minutes every morning. And I don't think I missed a day in about 3 years, okay? Why? Because every morning I make myself a coffee. Right? I don't need a reminder on my phone to say, make a coffee. Right, I don't need my PA to phone me and say, Rogan, you must remember to make your coffee today. No, I'm going to do that. That's a habit. That's imprinted in. So when I weigh out my coffee beans and I put them in the French press and I put a timer on for 4 or 5 minutes whilst it's brewing, I don't go on Instagram. I don't go on email. I do a 5-minute bodyweight workout in my kitchen, in my pajamas, right? Now that's so important. That's why I haven't missed a workout for 3 years, because I don't have to rely on motivation. It's a part of my routine. I make coffee, I work out. I make coffee, I work out. I don't have to get changed. I don't have to decide what workout I'm doing. I don't need to drive to a gym. So all these potential decisions that become procrastination and become a reason to back out of the behavior, I don't have. I just get it done. And you know, most people would consider me to be in pretty reasonable shape, and I don't go to gyms, but I do a 5-minute workout every day. And so I've really incorporated that. I've made it easy and I've stuck it on to an existing behavior. And you'll remember that case study I told you at the start, I shared with you about this 42-year-old chap. I said, do it in your kitchen. And I think kitchens are one of the most powerful places to work out, because people are in them at least once a day. Most people are in their kitchen at least once a day. So I was just imprinting, I was just putting it out there for him. Do it when you're in your kitchen. Now he's figured out himself, oh, while my peas are boiling or steaming or my broccoli is, I'll kind of do my workout in the meantime. And then I get to reward myself with dinner. And I'm not saying you have to follow that strategy, but what I'm saying is you need a strategy. You cannot leave it up to just, right, I've read this great book, I've heard this amazing podcast, I'm going to do it. That may work for some people, but many people, and this is one of the biggest problems, Drew, today, I would say, is that we're surrounded by so much brilliant health information, whether it's on podcasts and books, on Instagram. You know, we can often feel as though we're doing something, but we've done nothing. We listen to a podcast, we agree with the content, But we haven't done anything with that. We just got inspired. We see a great
category
meme.
Like edutainment, you know, educational entertainment. It's more watching like a Netflix show about something and then feeling like you've done it, but it doesn't mean that you necessarily have.
And I'm guilty of that, right? What I'm saying is I think that is natural for, I consume health pod, you know, it's not a failing. I'm not sort of making people feel bad about that. I'm just saying that's the reality. And so what my book is about, I'm helping you take action. And what I figured out, Drew, in this social media introspection time, I actually realized why this book has struck a chord with so many people and why it's helping literally everyone who picks it up, because actually that book is applicable to everyone, no matter what you want in life. If you want to improve your life in any way, whether it's performance at work, whether it's more focus, more concentration, longevity, it's going to help you. If you want it to help a symptom like anxiety, depression, type 2 diabetes, the book will also help you, because they're universal principles of health. But what I've realized, why I think it's been so profound and why so many companies have me go and talk to them about implementing this as their sort of well-being program, is because I'm helping people change their identity through action. And I really think it's really that important. It's often we have an identity, like that patient, let's go back to that 42-year-old chap, right? So what happened with him? He comes in after 4 weeks, feels like a failure. He's like, I told the doc I was going to do 40 minutes 3 times a week. He comes in, he's talking softly, his shoulders are rolled over. He's reinforcing the belief that he has of himself, that I'm someone who can't stick to health plans. You know, I can't stick to programs. I just can't do this stuff. Suddenly, by flipping it, by making it easy so he can do it, right? He comes in 4 weeks' time with different body language, with a smile on his face, speaking in a different way. So not only is he doing something that's going to help his health, I've helped him change his identity. Now, Drew, his identity is as someone who can stick to health plans. I can do what the doctors ask me to do. I'm showing myself on a daily basis that I, no matter how bad my day is, I've still prioritized myself and given me 5 minutes of time to be proactive for my health. And actually, I don't think I quite got it when I was writing the book. It's only on that reflection and seeing the feedback in the UK. I'm helping people to change who they are through what they do.
Because momentum creates momentum, right? Both positively, we can spiral upwards, and also in the opposite way too.
100%. And that's the key. And look, some people will say, look, I get this, doc. I understand what you're saying. But for me, I just decided I was going to get healthy and I changed overnight. I will say there are some people who can do that. There's no question. In my experience, it tends to be people who have had some kind of painful life experience. It could be, you know, a bereavement. It could be, you know, they lost, you know, they've had a relationship breakup. It could be, you know, like, it could be that they've suddenly had a health complaint, so that suddenly they've got angina in their 40s and think, right, I got to stop smoking. I can't do this anymore. You know, I'm going to die soon if I don't make some sort of change. Sure, I get it. For some people, things can get so bad that they can use motivation to get them going. But I say for the vast majority of people, Drew, it's not enough. If you are planning to make a change on motivation alone, I unfortunately think that it's not going to be as long lasting as you would like. So yeah, I actually think take action. You know, if all someone does, you know, although the program is 5 minutes from mind, 5 minutes from body, 5 minutes from heart. So really to fully do it is 15 minutes a day. Even if all you do is take one of the actions and cement it in for 5 minutes a day so it becomes a habit, you know what? That will still get you on the road to recovery. That will still get you on the road. And as you say, momentum builds, but you got to start somewhere.
It's so true. Give us an idea of why and how you came up with mind, body, and heart and some sample exercises. You already talked about the body and the kitchen and doing that, but you know, heart is an interesting one. I think a lot of people are wondering, like, okay, why is that included into the mix?
Yeah, so I remember, Drew, sitting down trying to write this a little, I can't remember when it was now, a year and a half ago. And I thought, I know 5 minutes works because I've seen it over and over again with patients. But I thought, well, I believe in holistic health, so it can't just be about 5 minute workouts. And I was really trying to figure out, how do I make a really simple structure? Because I think simplicity is key. Like, I think if you really want people to do things, the simpler you can make it, the more impact things have. And I think it's hard to make things simple. That's why I'm very, very proud of this book, because it took a long time to try and condense and distill something down to what I hope is the essence of health simplicity. But I thought, what are those components and how can I still keep it simple? And I thought, okay, well, everyone knows that we should move more. So of course, one component is going to be physical health, you know, moving your body for at least 5 minutes a day. I thought, well, mental health is super important. So let's do a 5 minute mind heart snack as well. So when I say mind, that's about your mental health. That's the idea that 21st century living is tormenting our minds. You know, we're overloaded with information. We're overloaded with things to do. In the UK, 1 in 4 people in any given year are going to be diagnosed with a new mental health diagnosis. You know, I think depression, I think, is the common one. The statistic is actually 1 in 4 people in the UK are going to be diagnosed with depression, okay, in any given year, which is a staggering amount of people and really reflective of that there's something going on in society that is not, you know, harmonious to our mental health. That's just one example of that. But then I thought, there's still something missing. There's mental health, there's physical health. And, you know, we've spoken about this before, how important human connection is. And that's when I got it. I thought, it's heart. It's heart. And I'll tell you why I called it heart, because heart's a little bit confusing. Because when people hear about a doctor talking about heart health, they're thinking about cardiovascular health, right? So the way I describe it is this. When I went to medical school, I was taught about the heart. And what I was taught is that it is a physical organ. It's a muscle in your chest that pumps blood around your body. And that is true. That is what the heart does. But Drew, heart's got another meaning as well. It's the meaning that poets and artists and songwriters have been waxing lyrical about for years. And that is the essence of what it means to be a human being. It's about connection. It's when we connect with other people with our hearts. And we know full well how important heart health or human connection is for our health. We knew it. The research has been there for many years now anyway. You know, last time I was on your show, I was sharing some of the research, which I know you shared as well, about some statistics are suggesting that, you know, the feeling of being lonely can be as harmful as smoking 15 cigarettes per day. People who feel lonely are 50% more likely to die earlier, 30% more likely to have a heart attack or stroke. You know, this may be a psychological component of feeling lonely, but it causes real physical, biological changes in our body. And I thought, you know, I have to tackle that because this is one of the most important components of health. And like, I don't differentiate in the book between what's more important than others. But if you pushed me, I'd say heart health is the most important, because what I have found, Drew, is if you pay attention to heart health, if you pay attention to daily human connection, often your mental health and your physical health take care of themselves. Often our lifestyle choices or the decisions around lifestyle we make are as a consequence of feeling isolated and feeling alone. Therefore, we binge on sugar because we feel alone. We sit there, we don't want to get up and actually move our bodies because we feel alone. We feel stressed out and impacts our mental health because we feel alone. And, you know, I put this is the final section of the book. And I actually say at the start, I think in the introduction, I say, you may be skeptical about this part. And that's kind of why I put it at the end. I thought, let me give people what they're sort of used to getting and they're sort of okay with. And then let me build the case for them as to why heart health is so important. And that is the one that I think has connected most with people. They you know, actually, one of the early readers of the book said, you know, Dr. Chatterjee, it's interesting. I actually thought I was pretty healthy. You know, I do Pilates regularly. I eat pretty well. But I realized I do nothing in Heart's Health. I live by myself. And I'm actually really, really lonely. And what she has adopted from the book is she now makes an effort every evening or sometimes in the day if she has time, she will phone a friend or her mother every day. And sometimes it's just a few minutes. So it could be just a quick 5-minute call. But she connects each day with a human being that means something to her. And she, you know, she sent me a few messages and she said that the difference has been amazing. The way she feels about herself, the other sort of, you know, the bits of snacking of sugar or drinking a little bit too much alcohol at the weekend, it's all gone. Not because she was trying to reduce them, but because she no longer needed to substitute something in her life for what she was lacking. And, you know, there are actually more. So the structure of the book is in each of the sections, there's a selection of what we call, what I call 5-minute health snacks. Right, I quite like that as a concept for people. These are just health snacks. There's, I think, 30 or 40 5-minute health snacks in the book. And I say, choose one from mind, one from body, and one from heart, and do them each day. Really, really simple. So you said, give us some examples. So in body, there's lots of different 5-minute workouts in the book, okay? But they all have got this in common. None of them requires to join a gym. None of them requires to buy any equipment. None of them requires to get changed, right? Again, I'm using the science of behavior change to go, look, if I make it easy, if you don't need to buy something, if you don't even need to get changed, you've got less reasons to say no. How many people, Drew, and I include myself in this, have used, got 10 minutes away to the gym. Not today, I'll do it another time. Or, you know, I don't have the right equipment. I would do that, but I don't have the piece of equipment that they need me to. So of course I can't do it. So let me put Netflix on instead, right? I'm removing those excuses from people with compassion, right? I'm not criticizing people for not doing it. I'm saying I'm going to remove them. So literally you have no reason why you can't do it. And there are strength workouts, interval workouts, yoga flows, playful workouts, dancing, right? One of the 5-minute health snacks in body is dancing, right? Easy. Doesn't cost any money. I say dance to your favorite tune. Put on, find a time in your day. And I was doing this for a while with my daughter before dinner. We'd crank on the tunes and we'd dance for 5-10 minutes together. That's movement. Right, we're so conditioned, Drew, to thinking that movement has to have a name. Right, oh, you know, I've done body pump, or I've done Pilates, or I've done yoga. Well, hold on a minute, why can't dancing count? All we're talking about is moving your body. And so, you know, I think I've made it, I think not only have I tried to make health practical in this book, I'd like to think I've made it fun. Right, we've very much had this mindset that it's got to be about deprivation. It's got to be hard. It's got to be about punishment. I'm like saying, well, hold on. Why don't we reframe it? What if we make health fun, like a fun activity? I bet that most people will read those health snacks and go, they all sound pretty cool, actually. I'd quite like to do them.
Right, because if it's not fun, we're not going to keep it up. You know, willpower is a finite resource. And every so often, we have to tap into it. But we don't want to tap into it for everything that's there for us because it's not a sustainable way to do it. So if we can't have fun in the process, we're just not going to keep it up. That's why when I look at my friends who I feel not only eat healthy, but live healthy and feel great, they're people that keep it up because they enjoy it. You know, nobody's forcing you. Nobody's forcing me to be this way. We're going to do these things because it actually is fun and it pays the dividends from having executed. Which leads into the next thing that I want to talk to you about. You know, a big reason why people stop any kind of plan that they do is because they're hard on themselves. They're hard on themselves because they set very high expectations of how something's going to happen. They're going to be perfect at it. Naturally, we can't be perfect at things all the time. They fail and they get so hard on themselves. Is there any exercises or snacks, as you say, in the heart section that really relate to self-forgiveness or self-compassion for the folks who are listening who are like, I had all these goals this year. I had not only New Year's resolutions, but on top of that, I had all these things that I wanted to do. And then the pandemic hit and I couldn't do them. And now I'm just struggling to just make it through the day. So are there things that people can bring in to start to let go or forgive or step back into self-love to let go of all that unnecessary noise that they might have been holding on to?
Yeah, I think it's such a great point you raised, Drew. Yes, the answer is yes, there absolutely are. There's a lot of heart health snacks that will help them. And I think one of the fundamental issues there is that if someone can't do something that they've set out to do, let's say they fail in achieving the sort of behavior that they wanted to, they then think they are a failure. So you can fail at bringing in a health snack into your life, but that doesn't mean you're a failure. And I think it's about this whole idea of identity. We often define ourselves by whether we can do this health plan or not, whereas actually we've got to have a bit of distance there. It's like, okay, maybe that was the wrong health plan for me. Maybe I couldn't do it for whatever reason. But irrespective of that, it doesn't define who I am. I'm still, you know, a wonderful human being who has so much to offer the world, who's an amazing parent, who's got amazing friends. You know, it's when we conflate it all together that we're either feeling on top of the world because we've been to the gym four times a week, and therefore not only is my health good, but I am good. And if we don't do it, I failed at health, but I've also failed at being myself. And we need to start bringing in a bit of separation. So one of the exercises in the book is about writing down each day five things you love about yourself. Okay? Very simple. Very, very simple. Many people find it hard to do. And actually, if you find it hard to do, it's a very good indication that it's probably an exercise you should spend a bit more time with. It can really very quickly build up self-esteem when you realize your weight, your ability to stick to a health plan does not define you. You are separate from that. You could be an amazing person. You could be an amazing friend. You could be a caregiver. There could be so many other things about you that are wonderful. But if you don't remind yourself about them on a daily basis, you can soon suppress it down and you could feel that you're worthless. And so there are many more exercises like that, but that's one that comes to mind. There's a lot of gratitude exercises in there, Drew, that also help with this, because when you feel gratitude, when you feel grateful for things around you, it puts life in a bit of perspective. It's hard to be hard on yourself when you're feeling grateful. And I know you've talked about gratitude on this podcast before. I'm sure we've spoken about it before, but it's always worth reiterating because, again, we're conditioned to think there's got to be something cool and new out there that I haven't heard yet, that this is the missing secret I'm waiting for. No, you know what? I'm glad if we're repeating gratitude. I'm glad if we've said it before. I'm glad if you bring it up every other show of yours, because you know what? I hope that at some point people listen and go, you know what? I've heard all these different people talking about gratitude. Maybe it's time I start bringing in a daily gratitude practice. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I really think we want something new and fresh, but we know the rules of good health. We know what we should be doing. We're just not doing it. So gratitude really helps there. I've got, I think, two or three gratitude exercises. One that I think I've shared before, but I will share again because it is what I do. And I love it. And it's something that I've been doing for years. It's what I do with my wife and my children. We answer three questions. What have I done today to make somebody else happy? What has somebody else done today to make me happy? And what have I learned today? Very simple, very, very effective. And again, let's talk about the rules of behavior change. Why do I manage to do that every day? Well, we have chosen that we do it at the dinner table, right? So why is that? It sounds so simple, but I'm going to spell it out, Drew, because I really want people to understand this. By having it over dinner, it means I don't need to motivate myself. I don't need to go somewhere to do it. I don't need to find 5 minutes in my schedule to do it. No, I'm going to have dinner, right? That's not negotiable. Most days I have dinner, and particularly in the pandemic, I've been having them at home with my wife, with my children. That's been one of the most wonderful things for me, is the amount of time I've got to spend with my family during this period. And during the meal, we go around the table with the gratitude exercise. In fact, you've done it with us, I think, when you were last in my house.
Yes, I remember doing it with you guys. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah. But it's super simple. And if people don't like that one, fine, choose another one. You know, there are many ways to do gratitude, but the point is, someone could get inspired, but they then got to figure out when they're going to do it. So that may work for you. You may want to do it around one of your meal times, but what if you want to do it before you go to bed? Okay, fine. That's a great time for many people. It can really help put them in a really good frame of mind to sleep. So I would give you a recommendation. Get a journal, get a pen. Keep it on your bedside table. Now, it sounds like I'm talking to children, but these are just basic rules that work. If you have a pen and a journal on your bedside table, you are being visually prompted every night when you go to bed. You're seeing it there. You don't have to go, oh, gratitude, yeah, I want to write it down, but it's downstairs. It's in the other room. I don't have a pen. No, make it simple. Make it easy for you to do the behavior, and you will do it. It reminds me a bit of, there's this sort of 48-year-old lady who had migraines. And she was, you know, her husband was busy. She worked a busy job. She had 3 children. And I got to know her, Drew, and I think stress is playing a big role here. She seems very, very stressy, a lot of stress in her life. And she said, yeah, Dr. Chachi, I get it, but you know, it's not that, it's something else. And anyway, I can't do anything about that. And okay, I was trying various ways to sort of connect with her. I suggested yoga. She goes, oh, Dr. Chachi, I knew you'd say that. Yoga's not for me, right? She goes, I'll try it if you want, but it's not for me. Anyway, she came back. She couldn't do it. It just wasn't for her. And I was trying. I knew that something was likely to help her if I could find the right thing. She said, I'm too busy for this stuff anyway. And then we got talking. And I don't know if this is a craze in the States like it is in the UK, but there's a big craze now in adult coloring books.
Yeah, it's a big craze here too. Yeah.
Yeah, because when you're coloring something intricate, your mind switches off. You are in the moment. You often access flow states. And she said, I love doing that, but I don't get any time. I said, okay, tell me about your day. I said, okay, well, my mornings are really busy. I don't have time in the morning. I get up. I've got to get my 3 kids ready for school. I said, okay, do you do anything? She goes, yeah, I go down and I make myself a cup of tea. I thought, okay, cool. Here we go. So I said, what if when you go to make that cup of tea, you actually do a bit of coloring at the same time? And she said, well, I said, look, the kids, you know, the kids are old enough now, they can sort of do a little bit by themselves. What if you made that cup of tea and whilst you were drinking it, you just shut yourself in the living room for 5 minutes and did some coloring? She said, well, yeah, I guess so. I don't really feel I've got time, but I guess I probably could. Anyway, to cut a long story short, Drew, she started doing that. Within 4 or 5 days, the sort of frequency of her migraines had gone down by about 50% or so. And literally within about 6 to 8 weeks, she was hardly getting them anymore. Now, I'm not saying that happens in every case, but what happened, Drew, is that she would access 5 minutes of flow state every morning. She would just, it's almost like when I said pulling, what I said at the start, when I just pulled the plug on social media for 3 weeks, it just gave me access to things that I wasn't accessing. It's kind of like what happened for her, just allowing herself 5 minutes to herself to tap in, to do something that nourished her mind. That led to ripple effects for her in other aspects of her life and actually led to a complete reduction in how many migraines she got. And again, she came in a few times, she had to remember, I got to keep the coloring book and the coloring pens next to my kettle in the kitchen. Why is that important? Because if you come down and you put the kettle on and your coloring book is there, but the crayons aren't there and they're in a different room, it just leads to procrastination. It leads to, I don't have them today. I didn't have time anyway today. I'll do it tomorrow. And then it becomes a second day and a third day. And before you know it, it was something you used to do. And I really, I feel like I'm going on a bit here, but I really want people to get this. Choose a behavior, and instead of looking for a new miracle cure each week, spend your time and energy implementing that behavior in your life. Experiment. Where should that behavior go? Is it best one in the morning? Is it good for me in my lunch break? Is it, you know, after I put the kids to bed? You know, what is it? Where does that behavior go? And that's where people will find the gold. You know, one of my favorite heart health snacks, Drew, is something I call the tea ritual. I don't know if you saw that one or not.
I did, yeah. Please, I would love you to explain it to the listeners.
The tea ritual is something my wife and I do on a daily basis, or normally we do. And it's this idea that, you know, the heart section is about connection, right? So many of us, Drew, are so busy these days that even when we're with the people we care about, we're not really with them. We're distracted. We're sort of on our emails, on our phones, on Instagram, right? I'm guilty of that just as much as the next person. And so this is really an effort to say, look, it doesn't matter if it's just 5 minutes, but intentional time with the people who mean a lot to you is really worth putting time and effort into. So the tea ritual, my wife and I have this thing, for 5 minutes a day, we will have a cup of tea together. And the goal, we have no phone, we have no laptop. And the job is that the role, that what we have to do is catch up with each other. We just inquire about how each other is. Now, I know this sounds, why is a doctor telling me about stuff to do with my relationships? Well, I can tell you that the reason I'm suggesting this is I think 20 years ago, we didn't need advice like this. I think this was inbuilt into culture. I think because of technology and how easily contactable we are and how many distractions we've got, I think we need a reminder of the sort of things that we used to do as a normal part of our day. But now often what happens, and I reckon in the pandemic, Drew, this will be the case for a lot of families. They're trying to homeschool, they're trying to get their work done, and although they are in the same house with their partner, maybe they haven't actually spent any quality time together.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost like just being physically together can sometimes make you feel like you're getting quality time, and that's not the case.
Yeah, and we, you know, some of my patients have told me that this tea ritual has saved their marriages, literally, that it has saved their marriages. And I can tell you, when I do it regularly with my wife, there's more intimacy, there's more closeness, there's more connection in our relationship than when we don't. And at the start of the pandemic, we stopped doing it. You know, for a few weeks, we stopped doing it. And we didn't realize why we were starting to, you know, things weren't maybe as smooth as we might want them to be. And there were just a few little niggles on both sides. And actually, once we started getting back to the tea ritual, those things just went away. They were a natural consequence of not spending that time together. And why, I'll tell you why the 5 minutes, Drew, is so powerful. Because people may go, yeah, but you should just do 5 minutes. And it's like, no. The commitment is to 5 minutes, right? And there's a difference. 5 minutes, why I chose 5 minutes in the book is not only have I seen it work with patients, but 5 minutes is very powerful. It's short enough where even the busiest person feels that they've got time for it, but it's long enough where you can experience an impact, right? And I think that's where the gold is with these 5 minutes. So we have we make a commitment to each other that for 5 minutes a day, and for us, our children are normally in bed by 8 p.m. So at 8 p.m. or as soon as they're asleep, we'll come downstairs in the kitchen. We'll make a pot of mint tea, which has got no caffeine in. There's a bit of ritual around it, right? So we make something so it feels like a special time. And the goal is for 5 minutes without technology, we're going to just catch up. But here's the thing. Is it always 5 minutes? No. Sometimes we're still chatting half an hour later, right? But it's not like I set a timer, Drew, and at the end of 5 minutes, I was like, hey, babe, just hold up. Yeah, I've heard how your day is. We've done 5 minutes. I'm moving on. No, of course not. But some days, it is just 5 minutes. Some days, like Vid might say to me, hey, babe, listen, this is really important. I've got a ton of emails to do. So let's, you know, after 5 minutes, I am going to go and just get back to my work, if that's okay. And by having that open dialogue and communication, it's fine. It's like, hey, cool, I get it. Some days that's me. I'm like, I don't have long today, but let's just take five, connect a little bit, and then we'll get back on. But other days, we're still chatting after an hour. Okay, so it's not like there's some magic to 5 minutes. It's more the intention that that's how you create the habit. It's by doing small amounts every day. And the analogy I would draw to people, Drew, which is what I put in the conclusion of the book, is toothbrushing, right? So I think most people listening to the show at the moment probably brush their teeth in the morning and in the evening, hopefully for 2 minutes in the morning, 2 minutes in the evening. So that means they're giving their dental health 4 minutes of attention every day, right? Now let's think about that. We don't think, you know what? We don't not brush our teeth Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday and go, you know what? On Sunday, I'm going all in. I'm going for 1 hour of a deep clean on my teeth, right? No, we don't do that. We recognize that if we want to keep our teeth in good shape for life, we need a little bit of care and attention every day. But we don't apply the same thinking to health. With health, we think it's got to be hard. I've got to go for a 1 hour meditation session twice a week. So, okay, fine. I'm not saying don't do that. I'm just saying that's not a substitute for doing this every day. So this is kind of like toothbrushing for everything else. This is like 5 minutes a day on your mental health, 5 minutes a day on your physical health, 5 minutes a day on your emotional health. Because it really is, health can be that easy. I've seen it over and over again. You've got to change your thinking and you've got to start doing this stuff.
Oh, it's so true. And it's even true in areas that we don't often think of it as being true, even in the world of finances. So much of the research around building wealth over time, you know, there's a popular book here in the US that came out in the 90s. It's called The Millionaire Next Door. And it talks about how most, you know, the average millionaire in the United States didn't inherit their wealth and didn't make it through the lottery or selling, you know, all of a sudden, you know, through a big exit that ended up happening. It happened slowly over a period of time about being diligent and putting, you know, a regular part of your weekly pay into investments, whether it be stock market or real estate, slowly over a period of time, getting a chance to build up. That's how wealth is created. But that's also, as you're showing us in the book, that's how true health is created. We don't have to go all in. It can be something over a period of time. And it's tough because we don't often see ourselves, because we're in it every single day, we don't often see that these subtle 1 degree shifts that are happening every day, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes here, 15 minutes total in mind, body, and heart, we don't see the profound impact that they're having, but it is. And often anybody who's done little changes along the way and then goes and catches up with friends at a reunion or somewhere else, and people are like, something is different about you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
that's how it happens.
Yeah, and you say you can't see it. Well, actually, one of the things I talk about in the book is you must celebrate each success. So what do
Big
I mean about
part
that?
Of you know what BJ talks about? So talk more about that. Talk more about the
celebration. Yeah, so it's kind of So there's many ways to celebrate it. Some way of, you know, BJ will say that it's not repetition that creates new habits. It's emotion, right? So that makes sense to me on an intuitive level. We're humans, we respond to feelings and emotions, right? So we get it with, let's talk about a bad habit. I don't really like good and bad, but let's say a habit, an unhelpful habit. So let's say you feel low and then you buy a chocolate bar and the chocolate makes you feel better, right? So that's very powerful because you've got a feeling. You've got, when I feel down, I buy chocolate, I eat it, and I feel better. That is a very powerful loop that's now created in your brain. Next time you feel low, what do you think about having? A chocolate bar, right? And then you're creating this loop and this tendency to a certain behavior. And I'm saying you can do the same thing with positive behaviors. So BJ would say you can actually say something after you've done one of your habits. Let's say I do this 5 minute strength workout in the morning. One thing you can do is say, brilliant, I feel amazing. Or BJ would say, I'm awesome, right? Is what he says. Now, look, for some people, that ain't going to work. As a Brit in the UK, there is no way Brits are going to actually say that stuff after they've done it. They're generally too reserved to do stuff like that. But you need some way of marking it. And it reminds me of what you said about you can't see what you've achieved. Well, there are ways to do that. So one way you could do it, you could get like a mason jar and put in a coffee bean each day when you've done one of your health snacks, or it could be a lentil or a bean, something. So each day, three beans or three coffee beans are going into your mason jar, right? So if you keep doing those health snacks, it's like money in the bank. This is like health snacks in the kind of health bank. You can visually see at the end of the week, oh, actually there's 21 beans in that jar. Oh, you know, I thought this week was rubbish. Work was stressful. I missed loads of deadlines. But then you look at the jar and you think, oh, well, 21 occasions this week, I did something proactive for my health. Another way that works is a war chart. In the book, there's a war chart that people can print off from my website for free as well. In fact, I would say to people, if you've got enough from this podcast, don't worry about the book. Print off the chart and start doing a mind snack, a body snack, and a heart snack, and tick them off. That is fine, right? Because I want people to take action. And why the chart is powerful, and if I could show you my kitchen now, you would see four charts up on the wall. Mine, my wife's, and my two children. Now, this is really interesting, Drew, and I'm sure you have listeners who've got children. One of the best ways, so for me on a personal level, I tick off when I've done my mind, body, and heart snack. So I don't use a bean jar, I tick them off. So I can always see in my kitchen a visual record. Oh, wow, there's all these ticks, week one, week two, week three. Look at all those ticks. Look at all those five-minute things I did for my health. My kids do the same thing, Drew. They've seen daddy do it for one, which is something that I take really seriously, is to try and model the behavior that I would ideally love them to start adopting in their way. And I think I've probably said this to you before, but you know, the one thing I've learned in 10 years of being a parent is that kids don't do what you tell them to do. They do what they see you doing. And I take that super seriously. So I put this stuff there. But I, at the start of the year, I mean, because they were like, oh, you know, they sort of helped me a little bit with the books and stuff. And I said, so guys, what are you going to choose? And so we've all chosen our mind snack. And what is great about this is that you can personalize it. There are so many options. You don't have to do them all. Choose the one that you like, you know, and that's what I love. You know, this is what always the clash of me is. One-on-one in my clinic, I believe in personalized medicine. I will personalize my recommendations for you. Then it's always a clash when you're trying to write a book for the masses. It's how can you deliver personalized health through a book? But you can. And I really think this Feel Better in 5 program can be personalized to everyone. You choose the health snacks that you want to do. So my son has chosen his. My daughter has chosen hers. My wife has chosen hers. And we all tick off our snack. And actually, seeing each other tick off their snack is a motivator to the other one to make sure they get their ticks.
Right. It's like gamification. You know, why do certain things in video games, or why do these apps, why are they so addictive? Well, it's the community aspect of it. It's like you see everybody else sharing this, you see everybody liking this, and that plays a role. Well, we can hack that, but for our own families in the positive direction to get everybody excited.
Yeah. So it's just, again, Drew, I would sort of reiterate, I don't think there's anything complicated we've spoken about today in this conversation, right? Time, all I'm asking for is 5 minutes from people. Pretty much everything in the book is free, okay? Pretty much everything is free. Like, you don't have to buy anything to do anything. And it will work for you. It works for everyone, Drew. And I'm not saying that with any hint of arrogance. I've just seen it over and over again. These things are not going to make you feel worse. They will only improve the way you feel about yourself. That's pretty much a guarantee. But if you do it, if you just listen to the podcast, like the ideas, and then get on with your day, well, they're not going to actually change anything. If you do something on the back of it. And truly, since the book's come out, you know, what's been really exciting for me is to see the whole variety of different places where people are running with this as an idea. So many schools in the UK now have contacted me and are using the essence of this as their well-being program. Because again, what do schools not have? They don't have time and they don't have money. Well, I've taken those two things off the table. You don't need time. You only need 5 minutes and you don't need money. They're all free. So the kind of common obstacles that people have, I've taken them away. So we can't say we don't have the time for it because it doesn't need time, or we don't have the money for it because it doesn't need money. But in contrast to that, I've given over the last few months, I've given, you know, well-being talks to Facebook Europe, to Google, to all kinds of companies, and I'm talking to them about these same principles because this works for corporate well-being as it works for school well-being, because these are the basic principles.
As it does for a family and a household.
Yeah, it works for you. It works for me. 5 minutes a day on your physical health, 5 minutes a day on your mental health, 5 minutes a day on your heart's health. What could be simpler? As BJ says, and I'm very flattered that he gave that sort of quote for the book, deceptively simple, but remarkably effective. It really works if you do it.
Mm. And those are the interventions that we need in this day and age, especially when it comes to the conversation of accessibility and wellness. How do we get this into communities that don't have the resources to afford sometimes very expensive interventions, you know, even organic food sometimes, even fresh food, you know, in food deserts and other things. So it's a powerful book, Rangan, and I want to acknowledge you for coming on the podcast to explain it. It's very interesting because on the surface, you can easily look at it and think you get it, but it actually takes a conversation like this to unpack the power of simplicity and how simplicity can radically change your life if you take that first step.
Yeah, thanks, Stu. Appreciate that. And it really, you know, I'll just finally say, I remember when I was writing this, Drew, that I really set myself the challenge of how simple can you make it? And what I mean by that is, let's say in my first two books, if it took me 8 to 16 pages to work up an idea and a concept, I said to myself, okay, in this book, can you put the essence of that on one page?
Mm.
Right, it was a real challenge to myself. How well do you know this, wrong? And can you distill the absolute essence of what you're trying to say into one page? And it was a really great discipline because it upskills you individually as a communicator to be able to do that. But it also made me really think about what is the essence of health? What does someone who's not into health and wellness, right? Will they pick up the book and find it practical? That was the challenge, because I didn't want to just preach to the converted with this book, right? The goal with this book was, can you take it to a wider audience? Can you penetrate people who wouldn't typically pick up a health and wellness book because they don't think it's for them? And that was one of the goals we had in the UK, was we got to do that by making it even simpler, by making it super practical. But then what's the beautiful thing is, Drew, is when you can reach that audience with simplicity, even the guys into health and wellness love it as well, because actually that's what they were looking for anyway. They were looking for something that they could do. So I've learned a lot on a personal level as well, writing a book like that, but it was very, very difficult, I must say.
It kind of reminds me, I don't know if it was Mark Twain, but there's that quote, I'll have to Google it afterwards, which I think it was Mark Twain who said, I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have the time, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it actually takes work to make things easy for other people to do. It takes work to really think through it instead of putting just a collection of good ideas into a book, really putting something that actually leads to behavior change. Because ultimately it's those habits, as you say in the book, those habits become who you are. I think you've done a fantastic job. I saw the copy of the UK edition when I had a chance to come out there, but I'm excited for it to come out in America. Does it look as beautiful as with all the charts and all the?
You know what? I'm very lucky in the UK. They have these gorgeously designed books, color illustrations. You know, really, really engaging books to look at. I know that's not done as much in America, but my new publisher has absolutely. You probably see that it is the beautiful color edition inside. It's a different color. It's got a pretty cool yellow cover that is just for America, which is super exciting. But yeah, it's fully color and illustrated inside. So I hope people in the US like it as much as they have done in the UK.
It's fantastic. Well, we'll have the link to the book in the show notes. Rangan, for our audience, that is just getting a chance to meet you for the first time and aren't following you and your great content that's out there, how can they find out more about you? Where should they go on the interwebs?
Yeah, I mean, look, depending what they're into, I would point them probably to my Feel Better, Live More podcast, which comes out every Wednesday. I'm on all the social channels, but the best place to find me is Instagram, probably, which is at Dr. Chatterjee, which is DrChatterjee, or my website, drchatterjee.com.
Well, when I first met you, Rungan, I want to take another moment to acknowledge you, because one of the first things I remember in our conversation when we caught up for coffee in person in London is your mission statement, you know, to impact over 100 million lives. And when I first heard that and getting a chance to meet you, I didn't really know what you were up to at the time. And I thought, like, wow, this is, you know, a good goal and this is very exciting. But over the years, having a chance to have met you, seen your books blossom, your podcast being like the number one podcast in the UK, I just want to say you're well on your way to that mission and you're truly an inspiration for those of us who are looking at you and your journey and your mission and thinking about how we can also impact change and make a difference in people's lives, not just once, but things that actually lead to lasting change that make us healthier, happier, and better citizens and human beings for the planet. So thank you for your work, brother. It's an honor to have you as a friend, and it's an honor to watch you shine doing what you do.
Likewise, man. Thanks, buddy.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Just a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not, I repeat, it's not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or otherwise qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Provider database. It's important that you have somebody in your corner that's qualified, that's trained, that's a licensed healthcare practitioner helping you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.